Welcome to Brave New Bookshelf, a podcast that explores the fascinating intersection of AI and authorship. Join hosts Steph Pajonas and Danica Favorite as they dive into thought-provoking discussions, debunk myths, and highlight the transformative role of AI in the publishing industry.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome. So we're getting off into our episode number 2 of Brave New Bookshelf. I'm Steph Pajonas, space opera romance and cozy mystery author. I don't know. I do a lot of stuff now with my co-host, Danica.
Hi, I'm Danica Favorite. I am a romance author and also co-host with Steph Pajonas, as well as the community manager at Publish Drive. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, this is the first time I've heard you describe what you write as space opera. So that's new and fun.
I know. I usually say sci-fi romance, but it's sci-fi romance has become very like aliens and monsters. And I tend to write mostly humans in space. So I've been saying space opera romance. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that change. I like that new distinction because you're right. It is one of those things that is changing.
And yeah.
But I think that's everything in publishing, right? It is ever changing.
And it is so ever changing.
Got to keep up with the times.
I agree. And I'm also one of the co-founders of the Future Fiction Academy, and we help authors use AI as part of their writing process and their business processes. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about some basics about AI, what authors can expect from AI, what it is, where it came from, those sorts of things. It didn't just come out of the sky from aliens and although that would have been really cool, but
I'm going to say, as a fan of Ancient Aliens and someone who has been secretly working on an Ancient Aliens book or an alien book, like the dude, it's the aliens. So oh I will gosh. Be happy to give aliens credit.
I'm happy to give aliens credit. That's so funny because I want to put Ancient Aliens in my next serial. So maybe we'll have to hook up on that.
Yeah. See, we're here to talk about AI, but as always, Steph and I just are like, hey.
Let's talk aliens instead. No. We're actually going to talk about AI. So what are some basics that we can talk about to get started with authors with AI?
I think, first of all, what we need to understand, speaking of aliens, believe it or not, everyone thinks AI, artificial intelligence. I don't know about you. I haven't seen the new ones, but growing up, I watched the original Terminator stuff with my dad. That was our thing. Mm. And for a long time, I think that's what we thought AI was. Were these Terminator robots coming to get us? And I still think there's a little bit of that fear, again, particularly for us who had that kind of stuff in our childhood, and we remember that. But I think we have to pare that down because AI, as we know it now, is not that smart. And it doesn't even work that way. And Steph, I love how you explain how AI works. So why don't you start about when we're talking about AI, what are we talking about and how does it work?
It's funny that you mentioned Terminator because I actually think of AI as the computer on Star Trek.
Oh, like yeah.
Like Star Trek Next Generation, when they always had conversations with the computer and the computer understood them using natural language, right? And now when I chat with ChatGPT or any of the LLMs, I feel like I'm talking to the computer on Star Trek because what they are natural language processors that sit on top of these things called large language models, but shorten it to LLMs because large language models is like a whole mouthful, right? And so these large language models are built in on neural networks. And when we say neural networks, these are like computer networks that are designed to mimic human brains, like neurons. And even I've read a couple of white papers on how they all work. And a lot of it went straight over my head because it is very, very complicated. But the basics of it is that these large language models were trained on large amounts of data. We're talking billions and billions and billions of words were put into it. And it basically built a statistical model of language, and it can understand its input from you as a user, prompting it, asking questions of it based on context. It's using natural language in order to speak with you, to have a conversation with you, which is what you're doing with ChatGPT, because it is built on top of these algorithms and these models that can turn around and give you a response based on context and what it knows, okay? So what Elizabeth likes to call this, my co-founder, she calls it the dictionary slot machine, because it's based on context. It's looking at what came before in order to give you an answer based on that. So let's try to think of it as learned language based on a huge amount of input. You're teaching a toddler how to read and how to understand language. You're giving this child a lot of input, right? You're talking to the child, you're showing them TV, you're getting them to listen to music or other people speaking. There's a lot of input that goes on, and then they build their language based on a lot of input. Same thing is happening with neural networks. So something to think about, that it's actually like trying to learn how language works. And I think that's really, really cool. I think that's super, super
yeah,
cool.
I think it is cool, because I think what people don't realize is, or they don't like maybe think of it this way, but we aren't born knowing what a ball is. We aren't born, like right here, I have this little turtle guy that sits on my desk. We aren't born knowing that this is a turtle. And if you're in a different language, it's going to be a different language. But that's the point, is after a while, the more we encounter the turtle, we know that's a turtle. And think about like the board books that we give to little kids. And they're so basic. This is a cat. This is a dog. And then they're learning to read, see, spot, run. And so like, we're building on these basics of language to teach children those things, because they're born with a blank slate and they don't know these things. And that's exactly how AI and LLMs are taught. I don't know about you, again, like we're like avid readers, but I learned to read by reading a gazillion books. All the books that I read and things that I encountered, I know what a sonnet is because I read a million sonnets, and I had to do this exercise in high school where I had to write a sonnet. And I didn't do that because I naturally knew how to do it. I did it because I'd read a bunch of sonnets, and we had example sonnets in front of us where, okay, this is how we put together a sonnet. Now, if I were a sonnet writer and that became my thing, which it's totally not.
Me neither.
But the funny thing is that eventually I would have written enough sonnets that I could actually be good at it on my own, write a very good sonnet without having to look at a million sonnets. But that's because I had read so many and I had practiced so many times. And that's exactly how an LLM has become so good at processing language.
There's literally almost no way it could know those things without ingesting that huge amount of data. So it's something to consider, is that just like Danica was saying, that she read a ton of sonnets and then now she knows how to construct a sonnet, right? So something to consider is the fact that I can write books now because I've read so many books prior to this. I was a voracious reader as a child. My mom was bringing me to the library several times a week. Poor mom. And I was ingesting and reading and reading and reading and reading and reading. And then the structures of stories become almost instinctual at some point because of the fact that you've read so much.
And it's really interesting to me. And now I forget what story model it is that I use, but I had read so many stories that I was using a bunch of different story structures meshed together, like in a three-act structure or whatever. And it was really interesting because when people would ask me, which one do you use? I didn't know. But once I started using AI and having AI analyze, what I found was very interesting about my writing is that I actually very naturally fall into one of those structures. And it was very interesting to me because I went through a bunch of my books and then I could actually now, because AI was helping me analyzing it, I could actually see, okay, boom, yep, I always hit this point of the story structure within this page range. I hit this point within this page range. And it isn't because I studied the structure, it's because I read so many books.
Yes.
And that's how AI knows as well.
That's definitely what's happened to me as well. I took a lot of screenwriting in college. So I understood like three-act structure, climax, resolution, denouement, et cetera. I understood these things, but it wasn't until I like actually started writing and using them. And then And then recently, then and actually analyzing them with the AI tools, did I see that I was hitting all of those mile markers as we were
Yeah.
cruising down the road. It's pretty fun. It's really cool to think that there is this structure to storytelling. There is something about it that is inherent in so many cultures, so many places on earth. And then when you bring all of that into an LLM and you get it to analyze it and understand the structure, that it can do it as well. But we're going to say it's not always that great to begin with, right? Have you prompted lately and asked for some story structure?
I haven't. I think to your point, though, what happens, and this is what happens when we're learning too, as humans, that we have this woohoo, we're making advances, and then we're going to regress a little. And then we're going to learn a little bit more, and then we're going to take a huge jump. You and I both have kids. I know, remember all the regression tantrums the kids had?
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
right before they would like master a really good skill, like boom, Meltdown City. And it's hilarious because I think of the LLMs as doing the same thing. Like anytime people in the groups are saying, oh man, I'm getting terrible results, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, cool. Something cool is about to happen.
That's so funny. I didn't really think of it like that way. I always think of the LLMs as having moods. They have super moods. I know that these tools are not sentient. They're not sentient people.
They
Okay.
are not. They are
They are
not.
not.
And we talk about them like they're sentient, but they really cannot do anything they haven't been programmed to do. And so, if you are getting things from an LLM that is not appropriate, it's often because the programming behind it is not appropriate. Or
Yes, it's true.
as I've talked to people and they're like, I can't get the LLM to do this or that. And I'm like, okay, what's your prompt? And I would say, like, probably at least half the time, it's always there's something wrong with the prompt.
Yeah, it's true. We can see the progression of LLMs and AI over the last year and get a feel for where we're going to go from here. It's nice that we get our authors in the community on board and understanding the basics to get them started so that we can roll them up and get them really working with these tools further on
Right.
down the line. What are some of the basic things that you use AI for in general?
So in general, I use AI for a lot of things. A lot of times it's just ideation or like maybe I'm stuck on something or I want to chat with them. I've used it for marketing things. I mentioned this, I think, in the previous episode, but previous company I was at, our marketing team was using AI to write marketing copy years ago, like even way back when the marketing abilities of AI were not great. But now it's amazing to me how much it has jumped. I can stick a scene in it that I'm struggling with, and I can say, hey, give me some feedback on this. Why is this not working? Or what can I do here instead? And give me a list of 10 things that I could do instead. I love that one. I think that's one of my favorite prompts is to say, give me a list of 10 things for blah, 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 because it gives me options. And to me, it would be the same thing as if I called you up and said, hey, Steph, what do you think about this? Now I don't have to wake you up at 2 a.m. I wouldn't do that to you because you're my friend. But for me, that's when inspiration hits 2 a.m. I'm like, oh, okay. Blah, blah, blah. And now I have a little partner that I can talk to and say, okay, what do you think about this? Even other things that you don't think about, I am tentatively planning on doing some traveling in the summer. And I've asked AI to help me research things that I could do on my travels. And I've heard people using it for recipes. I have not done an AI recipe yet, but I think anything that you need ideas on, AI can help you with.
Yeah.
And always, 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 I just talked about recipes, always verify because we are
Make sure it's
talking to.
not make sure it's not poisoning you, please.
Yeah, we are talking sometimes to the equivalent of a toddler who is still learning. And so you might have a recipe where you're asking for something and it's wrong. And so anytime you're doing anything data driven, go ahead and just find another source to verify that data because they can be wrong. And even I was just thinking the other day, I was working on a data project and I wanted to make it look pretty. And I threw it into ChatGPT and I was like, hey, can you like put this into a chart or a graph or something? And it gave me a couple of really cool options. The sky is the limit. I think it's As much as you want to do it, or as little as you want to do it. There are people I know who use it for a few things, people who use it for everything. And ultimately, it's your choice. If you're like, I still don't want it to write my book, good. You don't have to let it write your book, but you could let it write your marketing copy. You could let it give you title ideas. So there's a million other things it can do. And so when you're thinking about, oh, AI isn't for me, maybe it's not for you in some of the areas, but maybe it's for you in other areas. I don't know, because I think you're an Apple person.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I'm Android. So this is a Google Pixel. And now when I do a search on Google, the first thing that pops up is an AI-generated summary of everything that Google has found on that topic. It's actually really great because I skim the summary first, and then I can look at it and say, ooh, this piece resonates with me. I click on it and it takes me right to the article that it got that information from,
Oh, that's nice.
which is super handy because I hate scrolling through a million different results trying to find something. And Google kind of has simplified that for me with AI to be like, boom, here's the summary of the results that I found. Which one are you most interested in? Boom, there you go.
So nice. Speaking of traveling, last year I went to Europe with my family. So I decided to do a lot of Googling ahead of time, and I still wasn't finding results for things that I wanted. And I went to ChatGPT for it. I said, hey, I'm going to be traveling and I'll be in Paris and I've got teenage girls. What are some things to be interested in this arrondissement in Paris? I will be staying. Please tell me stuff nearby. And it helped me a lot. Like, it really narrowed down my choices. It gave me confidence to then look for those particular places on Google. That it would tell me a couple of different museums, and then I could go Google those museums. You know what I mean? So it was like
Right,
a way for me to narrow down my search and find things that I needed to find. So yeah, I use it for lots of everyday things. My husband has been using it to pair wines with our food at night, believe it or
okay,
not.
that's awesome. I love that.
A couple of months ago, he was like, is there a Wine GPT? There should be a wine GPT. Yes, there is a wine GPT, my friends. If you need one, there is, but you can just ask ChatGPT. He'll tell ChatGPT like the kinds of wine that we have on hand and tell them the kinds of dinner that we're having and ask for a pairing. It's so much fun. We can do so much with ChatGPT. It doesn't even have to be for writing, but I am using it for pretty much every part of my process now as an author. Like, I've figured out how to use it for ideation and brainstorming, character development, world building, like even helping me generate prose when I need it. If I need help with describing a restaurant, I tell the kind of restaurant, where it is, give me some descriptions, include all five senses, these sorts of things that keep me rolling along with it. This is like the basic stuff that you could be doing with AI right now. And then, just like you said, you can be using it for your marketing material, you could be using it to help you write ads. You can use it for whatever part of your process that interests you, or you can obviously not use it at all if you don't want to. But we're trying to encourage authors to consider these tools as part of their process because we would like to destigmatize AI a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it's really important because so many authors are afraid of AI because they're afraid AI is going to take their jobs. And I've heard this in a couple places right now, so I don't know who to properly attribute it to. But the thing that I've heard in response to that is that AI isn't taking your job. Authors who know how to use AI is going to take your job. And I think that's really important because I hear such a wide variety of different things about AI. I read an AI book and it was terrible. Yeah. I've also read books that were AI assisted that were absolutely fantastic. And the difference between the two was the skill of the author who wrote it and who put that out. And so, yes, there will be AI generated garbage out there. No one's going to read it. But guess what? There's also going to be really good stuff that comes from AI that people are going to love. And the whole reason they love it isn't because of the AI, it's because of the author behind the AI. And that's one of the things that I really stress to people as I'm showing them different things with the AI is that when an AI generates a paragraph, And you're reading that paragraph to validate it and make sure that it's good writing and it's what you want. It's your skill as a writer that determines whether or not that is good. And an example that I liked to use is I was playing on one of my old books that I went through and I had this paragraph. And so I put it through the AI and I said, okay, could you improve this? And the AI kind of turned the hero into a jerk. And it wasn't that the AI was intending to do it. It's just that I was writing kind of a cinnamon roll kind of hero. And so like for him to come out and be like, ah, I'm like, nope, that's not him. But only I know that. And I, as the author, am the only one who can say, oh, no, AI, you didn't do a good job. Here, let's fix this. Let's do that. Let's change this. And it is very much a collaborative process with the AI to be able to get it to write anything that's not garbage.
I agree. I find that I really have to be in charge. And I think of the AI as being my junior writer. So I think of it as somebody that I would have to coach along, tell them what I want, give them guidelines as to what I'm looking for in a response. And oftentimes there will be moments when I get something back and I look at it and think, no, I don't like this at all. Turn around, please rewrite this in a more casual manner, or turn around and rewrite this to give me A, B, and C. And I think that that's something that people will have to get used to. When it comes to AI, is that it is a collaborative process. It is not a one prompt and done type thing that I think a lot of the naysayers are making it out to be, right? It's just like working with, I have to say it, it's just like working with another human being on the other side of the screen. But you have to understand that it's not a human being on the other side, that it's actually something that you have to coach and you have to work with. And it needs to be a collaborative process, just like you said.
Exactly. And I think it's also really important to understand that Steph and I are talking about writing with AI. And I know a lot of authors who try it and it's not for them. And that's okay. For example, in case you haven't noticed, I like to talk. I'm a talker. And so my process for years has been that I dictate my books. And I was finding that some of the AI stuff was not satisfying because I missed that dictation part. And so I had been thinking about why is this a struggle for me? I'm like, oh yeah, because what I really want to do is get in my car, talk into my voice recorder for a couple of hours and come back with a couple of chapters. And that is what satisfies me as a writer. I know other writers who are going to say, nope, I want to sit in the computer and do this all day. And you can do that. And that's okay too. And so I think that we really have to make sure that anyone listening to this understands that there is no one right way to do it. It's your way and what works for you. And so figure out the pieces that you love about it. You can say, hey, you know what? That's not for me. And that's okay. But I also really want to encourage people that when they see someone doing something that's not part of their process, to not say, oh, you're terrible, or to be down on them for that, because it's just their process. But ultimately, what they're writing, what they're doing with the AI, that's all them, because the AI can't do anything that you're not teaching it to do, that you're not telling it to do or giving it to them.
So let's talk a little bit about the assistive element to AI, since we're on this topic already, right? I said in our first episode about how I came to AI because I was going through a lot of brain fog from COVID. So it became almost an assistive device to me at this point, like helping me with my memory and remembering details and then getting details out of my brain and onto the page, which was literally like the hardest thing to do at that point with the brain fog. It was like thinking through fog. There's a reason why it's called brain fog. You can't see very far in front of you or behind you, and all you can do is whatever is in the moment. And that is a very hard thing to go through as an author. So I came to it as an assistive device, and I think a lot of other people have too. I've heard from plenty of people who have been through traumatic brain injuries, through immune disorders, who maybe even can't sit at a desk for very long. It can be a real help to them if they need it. If they can only work at a desk for an hour a day, then we want to try to maximize that hour of time that you
Right.
get. And if it's spent just barely typing out five words, that can be very
Yeah.
detrimental to your career. But if you could prompt the AI to give you two paragraphs worth of stuff that you could work on, and even not at your desk, if you could work at it in bed or someplace else, just think about how much more you could be getting done and how much less stress on your body or your systems that would be.
Yeah, I agree with that because, like you, I've encountered a lot of authors who have varying levels of disabilities that make writing really difficult for them. And it's been really cool to me to engage with them and hear them talk about how much more hope they have because there's a book inside them. They desperately want to write and they just don't know how. And suddenly they're getting a tool that helps them do that. The other thing that I want to talk about, because we haven't really talked about this angle yet, but I know we're going to get there, is audiobooks and AI audio. And for me, that is a huge passion of mine because I have a child who has an auditory processing disorder. I have spent thousands of dollars, many, 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 many hours of therapy to help her get through school. And literally, the only reason she graduated high school is because of audiobooks. And unfortunately, in her case, I'm still really angry with the school about this, but I will someday get over it. However, what I will say is that it taught me a lot about sourcing tools on my own, is that she was deemed not disabled enough to be on an IEP. And basically, the school literally told me, if you will put her on meds, we can give her an IEP. I'm like, she doesn't need meds. She just needs help with her reading. And they never understood that. And I put her through all this therapy and everything. And what we found through therapy with her is the way that she learns is she has the book in front of her and she's got the audiobook in her ear. And that's how she did it. Now, for those of you who are audiobook people, it takes longer to get through an audiobook than it does to read a physical book. And so I did advocate with her teachers to get extra time on some of the longer books. But what I realized very quickly is that that's how she could learn. The problem is, as we all know, not every book is an audio. And it was really difficult. I jumped through so many hoops to be able to get her the audiobook she needed. And the cool thing about it, though, was that now she learned by the middle of high school to learn how to advocate for herself. And I can remember like the first big book she had to read once she'd started advocating for herself. I'm like, oh, do you need me to talk to teachers? No, mom, I got this. And she did. And this kid has navigated successfully so many ways of getting audiobooks that she needs. Now, if you hand her a book and say, read this, she's going to be in tears because she can't. The other day, we're in the car and she was ignoring me. And I look over and I could see the earbud in her ear. I'm like, you're listening to a book, aren't you? And she's, yep. And this kid's always got a book in her ear and she loves to read. But here's the problem, not just in learning, not just in getting through school, is that she will start a series by some of her favorite authors. They're series she loves. Here's the problem. Many series, midway through the series, they stop doing the audiobook because that is unfortunately an economic factor that people don't realize how expensive audiobooks are to produce. And so what happens is when the publisher or even a self-published author is looking at those audiobooks and saying, it is costing me more to produce this audiobook than it is to make it, than I am making on this audiobook. They make that economic decision to stop the series, mid-series. And so there are so many series. My poor daughter has never gotten to finish because it's not an audio and it's not cost effective to do. I do have people who a lot of my readers are elderly. And so I get so many letters, hey, is this an audio? And I'm like, no, sorry. And I hate that. I hate how heartbreaking that is to the people who need those audiobooks. And what's important is that when people say, oh, but you're taking money from the narrators, here's the thing. These audiobooks aren't going to get made anyway. So, if we have a way to make books into audio that would have otherwise not gone to audio, We have a whole population like my daughter. Her story is not unique. I, again, like having gone through this whole series of life where I was advocating for her and finding resources for her, there were so many parents with kids who have this problem. And the therapy for it is very expensive. And then having to go out and buy an audiobook because the school isn't willing to provide you with that material, like it's hard. And it's heartbreaking. And I'm not saying don't go buy audiobooks, because please buy the audiobooks. But I know those struggles that parents have. And not just parents, but people. And even as your eyesight is declining, to be able to hear that book, it's really amazing. And I'm a big advocate for that. And for people who have any kind of visual impairment that they need the audiobook. Or like I said, for my daughter, it's not that she's visually impaired, it's a processing issue in her brain. It's so wonderful to me that this child, who years ago would have probably been written off, now has a hope at having a future because she can access the written materials she needs to succeed.
I love that. My younger daughter is very similar, where she just reads extremely slow, and she has had some auditory processing problems in the past. So we also do the same thing. We try to give her the audiobook at the same time that she's reading the book in print, and we try to do that as often as we can. I'm excited for the possibility of her getting access to more books as AI audio starts to take off. When AI audio started getting really, really good this past year, I was like, oh, this is a game changer for people who are hard of sight, for people who rely on audio as part of their life. When you consider long haul truck drivers who listen to audiobooks like constantly on their trips, there are a million different reasons for needing audio, right? And now, so many more books are going to be open to people in this format. And I'm totally jazzed by it. I'm super excited for it because I think that it's going to be another game changer for the entire industry. I understand that some audiobook narrators are frightened because they're thinking this is big and could totally change their industry. But I'm going to say that the people who are doing really well with audiobook narration, they've already made a name for themselves, or the ones that are coming up and they're really good at this, I don't think that they're going to be replaced by this technology. I think that they're always going to have work. The people are always going to be looking for them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is something that we really do have to address, is the advent of AI is going to have to make us all step up our game, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that we have to be constantly growing and learning and improving, whether that's our craft or whatnot. And I think that's okay. And so I think that if you're in the spot of complacency of saying, ah, I'm just doing my thing, and come on, step up the game a little bit. And like with the audiobook narrators, the times that I've considered hiring a narrator, and again, it was just never cost effective for me to do so.
Same.
But like the authors in the different groups, I can't tell you how many of them have said, oh yeah, my narrator ghosted me. I
Yes.
paid this money and never heard anything back.
In the middle of a series, too, sometimes.
Yeah, I
Oh.
actually had that with a cover designer looking at AI and AI cover design. I had that with a cover designer where I spent more money than I've ever spent on a series of covers. I was so excited. And midway through, the designer ghosted me. And I paid all the money. I paid everything. And you're never going to get that back.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. It's so
And
frustrating.
so, like, I get it. Here's the thing. AI is going to replace those people.
Yeah.
Those are the people who are going to be out of a job, and frankly, they should be out of a job. Sorry.
Sorry, I agree. I agree 100%.
But honestly, like, I have a cover designer I've used. I haven't used her recently because I haven't had anything for her to design for me recently. But as much as I think AI covers are great, if I had a cover that I would fit like with what she does, I absolutely would go to her first and say, hey, could you do this cover for me? because I really do like her work. And that's the same with audiobook narrators. My kids read a lot of fantasy books, and fantasy is not going to translate well with some of the AI stuff. I think you could
Yeah,
probably start doing
currently.
it. Some of the narrators that they have, because we've gone on road trips and played their books on the road trip in the car for everyone to listen to. And man, those fantasy narrators are really good.
They
And
are.
so if I had a choice between that and an AI audiobook, I absolutely would choose that narrator. So I think that people need to understand that it's not a black or white thing. It's this whole scale of gray and what's going to fit that area the best in that given situation.
I think it's important to understand that AI is just another choice. It's just another
Right.
format in this case.
Yeah.
So I've been doing some AI audio, and I consider AI audio to be a part of my process because I can get it done and I can get it out there. And if it is earning income and bringing more income in, that means that I have more income to spend on things like maybe getting a human narration down the road, which would be awesome.
Right.
Like, I'm still all
Right.
for that, right? I can use that income to bolster my business and be able to provide more for my readers.
Exactly.
It doesn't need
And
to be either or, it can be
that's what I was
both.
just saying with the cover designer. As soon as I get some stuff that I need covers for, I'm going to really sit down and think, okay, this cover designer that I really like only designs things in certain genres. And so that's why I'm like, I don't know if she would be able to do it or not. But also, does she have room in her schedule? And like all of the things you consider. And it isn't that, okay, I'm going to choose AI all the time. No, I'm going to really weigh what are the considerations? What is the time frame look like? What does the cost look like? All of the different things. And yes, what does the quality look like? Although, to be honest, I've been blown away with some of the quality of AI covers lately. I've just been like, oh my goodness. So I really do think that, again, like it's a spectrum, and it's not either or, like you said, it's not either or. It's in the spectrum what fits the need the most at this time. So we're not trying to put anyone out of business.
But we
We're
are
not
trying to
trying to.
level up the business.
Exactly.
I'm looking to level up this entire business.
I love that. I love that idea of just we're just leveling up as authors. I feel like I've become a better writer because of AI. And it's not because AI is writing the stuff for me. It's because as I'm putting stuff into AI and I'm getting scenes analyzed or I'm getting my writing analyzed, I'm like, I said this sentence, I don't like it. How do I fix it? And the AI gives me ideas. And I'm like, oh, wait a second, I understand what's going on. And it isn't about the AI taking my place or doing it for me. It's, oh, wait, now it's causing me to think deeper about my writing and to realize, okay, this is really good. This is what I need to improve on. The feedback I'll get from AI, because a human editor isn't going to come back and say, here's this pattern in your writing. If it's a really strong pattern, yeah, they'll come back and say, yeah, you use this word a million times. Stop it. But AI can look at all the different patterns. And so suddenly you're like, okay, I understand that my scenes are always missing this little piece. And the human editor's not going to pick it up. I'm in the testing and playing phase. And so I've taken my published stuff and run it through AI and compared the notes between the AI and the human editor. And it's fascinating because it really does pick up things that I don't think I would have thought of otherwise.
Yeah, I just find that AI is going to be bringing people up a notch. And unfortunately, because we are leveling up, there are some people who will not level up with it, right? So when we're talking about designers being afraid of being replaced, et cetera, we're talking about the fly by night, slap a couple of stock photos together and put a title on it. Book titles that we've all seen them on KDP.
Yeah.
I think back on my like 10 years in this business. Oh my God, like the first couple of covers I saw were just what happened here? So like this AI is going to level up even like the most basic stuff. And I think that the industry is going to be so much better for it. I think we're all going to be
Right.
better for it.
And the thing I also want to say, because we are talking about upping our game and leveling up and really trying to do better. If you're sitting here going, hey, there's nothing wrong with what I do, it's not an attack on anyone. It's not saying, hey, what you're doing isn't good enough. You can keep doing what you're doing. There's nothing wrong with what you're doing or how you're doing it. But for people like you and I, because you and I are really very growth mindset focused, and
Yeah.
we're always striving to improve and do better and to grow, and we embrace that. And it's okay if you're like, you know what? I'm pretty content where I'm at. You get to make that decision, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. There's no shame in that. And I want to be really clear that even the current cover designers who don't use AI, a lot of them are very good cover designers. A
Oh, yeah.
lot of the narrators who aren't using AI are very good narrators. And so this is not to diminish anything that anyone is already doing. It's just to say, we're going to add something else. It's like having an ice cream sundae and saying, you know what? I'm going to put two cherries on top. I'm going to put extra sprinkles.
I want extra sprinkles and
Yes,
whipped
I want
cream.
extra sprinkles. Yeah. Come on, give me more of the good stuff. And that's okay. And so for me, I think it's really just acknowledging that we all have our own path. And for those who want to embrace and explore that path with AI, Steph and I are here to support you.
We are. And we're going to be
Yeah.
talking a lot about that over the coming
Yes.
weeks on Brave
Yes.
New Bookshelf. I'm excited because I really want people to see this as the technology that it's here to help us, to assist us, to give us the leveling up that we need. So let's focus on that definitely going forward. I'm excited about everything we're going to talk about in the coming weeks.
You go again, we are teasing here, but the guests that Steph and I have talked about wanting to have, we're so excited. And because even though she and I have these first two episodes, we've done all the talking just so you can get to know us and get to know where we're coming from. Ultimately, though, the people we want to talk to are people that we are learning from. Steph has talked about collaborating with the AI, and that's a collaborative process. And learning AI, learning to navigate the writing world, that's something that's also going to be very collaborative. And it's something we're doing together. And I love that. And that's why I'm really excited about this as our future.
Me too. Super excited. All right. Great. I think we had a really good discussion, especially about the basics of AI and the way that it can assist us moving forward. So I think we'll wrap it up for this week. And then hopefully we'll come back next week with some more fun stuff.
Looking forward to it.
Excellent. So we'll talk to you guys all soon.
Right,
Bye.
bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Brave New Bookshelf. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. You can also visit us at bravenewbookshelf.com, sign up for our newsletter, and get all the show notes.